This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today with Dr. David Gross, a Unitarian Universalist layperson, I guess we could call you, about a family camp, about a sailing camp that you've been doing for many years up in, where is it, Minnesota?
In far north central Minnesota, a little town of Cass Lake, about as far north as you can go in Minnesota.
And 60 teenagers and you and how many other adults for a week of sailing camp?
Well, first, let me thank you for the promotional comments on this program, but it's very important that I emphasize that I don't do this alone. We have 12 counselors, typically 9 or 10 adults and 2 or 3 junior counselors who are young people who have just come through the program.
But you've been doing this for how many years?
25 times over 24 years.
I see. And sometimes you've been a co-leader in charge of it.
Yes, I have been a volunteer counselor, spending a week on the island with the kids for all these years. And in recent years, I'm often one of the two co-leaders.
And you appear to be an intelligent fellow. Why would you do this?
I understand the comment and the humor. And when I'm in the parking lot and we're boarding the boats to go to the camp, the parents, as they're driving off, will often give us a humorous comment on better you than me going to the island with the youngsters. The truth is, I love it, and we have a wonderful time, and I come back so optimistic about the future of these young people.
And Unitarian Universalists are known as very intellectual folks, well-educated people, but they're not known for having fun.
Well, I agree with your first two comments, but for me, the community of the church is so very precious, and it is one of the attractions for me. And yes, many of us do have a lot of fun.
So tell us about this camp. You've told us where it is. What kind of an island is this?
It is an island named Star Island in the middle of a large lake by the name of Cass Lake, way north central Minnesota. It's the northernmost point on the Mississippi River.
Huh.
The river originates in Itasca, lovely state park, flows through Lake Bemidji, which is the Paul Bunyan legend lake, and then Cass Lake, the largest of them all. The camp is on an island, reached only by boat, 4 miles by boat.
How big is the island?
2 miles long, larger than you explore in a week on the island.
And there's been a Unitarian Universalist camp there for how long?
About 45 years. Huh. The structures were constructed in the 1920s by a family as a private retreat, family centered in Houston, Texas. They would go north for the summer to avoid the Texas heat. When air conditioning came in Texas, they stopped using it. It was abandoned for 10 years,
huh.
And they gave it to the church.
Donated it.
In the 60s.
Now, there are not a whole lot of Unitarian Universalists in this in the world, in this country. How many are there? I know it's a small denomination.
You are correct. Approximately 200,000 adult members, or in round numbers, 0.1% of the U.S. population. It is, in my view, unfortunately, a small denomination.
And yet a historic one.
It is. The Unitarian side has roots in Transylvania, the Hungarian-speaking portion of Romania today, and in Great Britain. The Universalist side was strongest in the New England states 200 years ago. Thomas Jefferson once said that the whole nation would be Universalist. He unfortunately was wrong.
And tell us a little bit of the difference between the two and how long have they been together?
The two denominations merged in the 1960s, I've forgotten the exact date, approximately 45 years ago. Unitarian heritage for me is the attraction in that it's a community of people seeking, studying. It's a process for me. The Universalist side for me is my hope. I hope for all of us.
And so you're really talking about universal salvation, universal, I know the Unitarian Universalists are not a doctrine church. There's not a creed you have to believe in to be a member, is there? So maybe there aren't those kind of requirements that other churches might have, that you have to believe X, Y, or Z.
You are correct, and you are the theological scholar. I am the active layperson. The Universalist side had and has a view of universal salvation. The Unitarian side are, in my view, the seekers, is the process, a continuing search for truth. There is not a creed that a member must sign. There are seven principles that are quoted, posted prominently in many of the churches.
I would think Universalists today might emphasize inclusivity. No one is left out. Everyone is, we're all in this together. Those sorts of ideas?
That is exactly correct. And sometimes at the forefront of some of the social needs of the nation. 30 years ago, women's issues. In the last decade, GLBT issues have been at the forefront. There's a banner of which I'm very, very proud on the local church on marriage rights, hangs outside the church.
For gays and lesbians?
Yes.
Yes. Now, what kind of, when there's family camp up on Cass Lake that you and your family have gone to for years, who comes? Is it popular? Or do you have to struggle to get people to Unitarian Universalists to go to this island?
Just the opposite. This camp runs full all summer. Most of the summer are family weeks, family camping. I was there just 2 weeks ago with a son, a daughter-in-law, and the grandchildren. Spent a week on an island, quality time with grandchildren. Early in the season, there are two youth weeks, which are devoted to teenagers, youngsters entering junior and senior high school years. Those weeks run full. Fortunately, this program runs full.
Now, it sounds like the Unitarian Universalists, which we may start calling UUs here to save time, may have an insight into capturing the attention, the interest of young people that many other religious groups are having difficulty with.
Yes, there is some success in the summer camp, and I'm pleased, delighted to be here to talk about that. But I won't claim that we have anything special on retaining the young people in the church. The statistics are not good. I read in the USA Today just a few days ago an article on numbers of young people who are active in their high school years in various Protestant denominations who drift away in the college years, the years following. And I don't know that we have the answer to that. Uh-huh. I wish I did.
But it sounds to me like a success with a camp for young people can only be a good thing.
I agree with that. I love it. And the youngsters who are in this program come back every summer. We run the program for young people who will enter in the fall, grades 7 through 12. Okay. And once they enter the program, we see them again every summer until about that senior year, where sometimes a foreign exchange trip or a summer job gets in the way of the summer camp experience.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Dr. David Gross, a retired professor at the University of Illinois who has been a volunteer at a sailing camp for Unitarian Universalists. And if you have a question or comment for him about any of the issues we bring up during this hour, do give us a call. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And I see we have a call already on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. I have a comment. And my husband and I were in Europe at one point. It seemed to me that the Unitarian Church was very, very different there. I wonder if that's still true. That's my question. And the comment is, I'm really excited about the camp. I didn't go, but I would love to. Thank you. Now I can just hang up and listen off the air.
Thank you for the call.
I struggle for a bit on how to answer whether the church is different elsewhere. I certainly make a practice of visiting many UU churches, and Steve, you were correct in that abbreviation, throughout the United States. And some years ago, many years ago, I did spend some time visiting our partner church in Romania, in the Hungarian language. I feel at home in any UU church that I have visited, and I have been in 40 or 50 of them. But there is a wide range. And some of them use the word fellowship rather than the word church, and often run without trained clergy as leadership, run a community of support network. Others are very much church. Some have a very strong Christian flavor. Others will be more on the humanist side. So there is a range. It is a broad tent.
And so it depends on the congregation.
Very much so.
On the leadership, on the lay leadership, mm-hmm. and on what pastors they call. Yes.
In Champaign-Urbana, our Unitarian Universalist Church is in the former Universalist Church building on Green Street, two blocks east of Lincoln Square, and we have elected to have the highest quality clergy for many, many, many decades.
Uh-huh. Let's talk a little bit about the family camp experience, and particularly the sailing camp. Why sailing?
We're on an island. We're in Minnesota, beautiful lake, and I love sailing. There are other activities there. There is canoeing, there are kayaks, there are hiking on the forest trails on the island. There are people who like the rocking chairs in the lodge. There are people who like to read, to sit, to watch the purple martins. I love sailing.
And apparently a bunch of teenagers want to learn how to sail. So what do you teach them first?
I spend a very few minutes. When we're at summer camp and we're on an island and we're away from cars and roads and the kids are outdoors and they're having a wonderful time and they're with their friends, classroom instruction does not succeed.
Sure.
So I'll spend a short 20 minutes on basically teaching a few safety procedures. Wear your life preserver. Stay with the boat when things go wrong. Equip the boat. And then we jump in the water. And if it's a warm, bright, sunny day, the very first thing we do is take a small boat out in 3 feet of water and tip it over and teach them to get it back right side up.
Oh, okay.
And then within the first hour, they're on a boat sailing. And I'm either on another sailboat watching them or I'm in an outboard motorboat chasing them and talking to them.
And how many boats are there, sailboats?
Camp has about 10 sailboats.
How big are they?
Most of the smaller ones are a brand name of Sunfish. They're about 10 feet long, one adult or two small children. Camp has four or five slightly larger boats. My own boat is a 23-foot cabin boat, which can easily carry six people, and I use that for instruction.
So you start off by showing them how to survive when a boat tips over and how to get it back up. And why do you start with a mistake?
I don't argue very often, but I'll pick up on the word survive. I would prefer we teach them to have fun.
Okay.
In a small boat sailing, a capsize will happen to all sailors. You get a puff of wind, you make a mistake, the boat tips over. So you want to learn how to get it back up and to not be afraid of that and to understand that that's part of the process. So we begin with the capsize drill.
But is it also a conscious effort to teach them a life lesson?
Absolutely.
Mistakes are going to happen. Things are going to be out of your control. How can you get back going the direction you want to go?
That's exactly correct, and I'll use that to segue into a larger view of the camp experience as this crew of volunteers chooses to run it. It is a place where the youngsters can explore, where we give them freedom to explore things they have not done, and we have the safety nets there so they can explore and fail and move on. And we're not there saying no. We're saying, yes, jump in and do it. And that's true in our program. It's true when we're doing construction work in the mornings. It's true on the boats. Explore and laugh.
One thing many people would be worried about going for a week with teenagers of that age coming from all around the country would be, what about problems with alcohol, with drugs, with sexuality, potential violence? How do you deal with all those issues?
Well, we're well aware of all the issues. First, we have a tremendous advantage. We're on an island, so we do not have cars and roads, and that removes the biggest risk of these young lives. We ask the youngsters to sign a pledge of no alcohol and no illegal drugs, and the counselors do the same. That removes another of the big risk factors. The sexuality, these are young people, and these are high school students, and we work to have a community, to be active as a group. But young people pairing off is an issue, and it's one the counselors are aware of, and we work in community. But we're not naive about these things happening.
And, of course, there's also much concern about the chance of sexual abuse of young people by counselors. How do Unitarians think about those issues?
In several levels. First, a very careful selection of the counselors. These individuals, and they're my best friends on this earth, recruited carefully, thoughtfully. In today's world, we do a background check on all the counselors. That is, unfortunately, a necessary part of our society.
Sure.
We are a large community. We're supportive of each other. As to the youngsters, most of the day they're out running as a herd. I say that affectionately. But in the cabins by grade level, this year I had the ninth graders, the youngsters, who in the fall would enter ninth grade. I had 12 of them. There were two of us living in the cabin with them. Oh. So we had two adults and 12 ninth grade students in a cabin.
Sure.
Boredom was never a problem. Sleep was a problem.
I'm sure. So do you have to take a week's vacation to recover after this camp?
I thrive with it, but a story, a slightly longer answer to that. For many, many years, we did this for 1 week each summer, and then demand for the program was so great, we doubled it and started with 2 weeks, and that required doubling the counselor corps. But for the transition year, nine of us did both weeks, and we were thrilled that we did it, and we said we would do it again, but none of the nine of us did two in a row the following year.
Ever, yeah.
One
is
enough.
Yeah, lack of sleep is it's no fun.
And young people at camp do not see sleep as a need.
Sure.
And we work a lot on that, not always successfully.
Now, is there religious content as well? In many church camps, when people think of church camps, they think of perhaps some pretty horrible theology.
Well, I won't pick up on horrible and theology in the same sentence. I'm not sure about that. But we do not do traditional theology classes. We do not have a Sunday morning service. We do not have Bible study sessions. We do talk a lot about the seven principles that are often quoted in the UU denomination. Inherent worth and dignity of all people. That's a phrase I will use when we have issues between young people, and we'll talk about respect for others. For these youngsters in a small denomination, they're often the only church in their area. And what we're doing in the summer camp is they're meeting Unitarian Universalist youngsters from Minneapolis-St. Paul, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And that community building is a powerful element for them, and we build on that.
How did you first get involved?
It's a two-part story. I'll make it as short as I can, but it's a story I love to tell. We found the camp when our children were quite young and were attending family weeks. When my oldest son was finishing sixth grade, he was struggling in school and with self-esteem and with a number of issues in life, and I'll jump ahead. He's now in his mid-30s and in a flourishing professional career as a surgical manager in Chicago. But we had a lot of concerns about him then. He went to the week. We sent him to summer camp and came home excited, more excited than he'd been on anything in many, many years.
Oh.
And he said all winter, "Dad, you've got to do this. You've got to come."
Oh.
So because it was important to him, I agreed to be a counselor, but I went with great fear and trepidation. And through fortunate, maybe wise people around me, I was assigned a cabin of youngsters 1 year older than my oldest.
Oh.
And I had a preview of watching youngsters 1 year older. So I came back the second year and the third and the fourth, always staying a year ahead of my own.
Huh.
And it was the greatest lesson in child raising I ever found.
I see.
And then my youngest son went through the program, and then he became a counselor, and the story goes on.
Huh.
My granddaughter is only 4 years away from the program.
Now, how many Unitarians get involved in these camps? I know this isn't the only one. There are others throughout the country.
There are about a dozen of these. The best known is a camp by the name of Star Island off the coast of Maine. There's a camp called The Mountain in the Carolinas. Maybe it's because we are a relatively small denomination. A number of us enjoy meeting other UUs and make an effort to travel to do that. In the same way, our national meeting, the General Assembly, the national business meeting of the denomination, draws about 3 or 4% of all Unitarians in the nation.
Huh.
6,000 gathered in Portland, Oregon in June.
Huh.
When you're small, you look for your friends and colleagues.
Now, tell us what kind of response you get from people that you meet years later who were involved in these camps, who knew you, who perhaps learned to sail with your instruction. What do they think about this as they mature?
I do have the privilege of meeting some of them many years later, having done this for 24 years. In fact, I was at the national meetings of the denomination and received hugs from several people who had been through the program 10, 20, 25 years ago. There are often two comments, and both melt my heart. One will be a thank you, and it'll be a sentence along the lines of, you were the first adult who trusted me to do, fill in the blank. And that fill in the blank might be to use a power tool, or it might be to sail a boat, but that word trusted me. I'd like to come back to that later. The other comment that I sometimes hear will be that you were the first adult that I called by first name and considered a friend. And that's something to think about in our junior high and high school age youngsters. How many adults do they see as a trusted friend and call by first name? We go by first name basis, and that is often true in our Sunday schools, but it's not true in our public schools, nor should it be with the adults. My relatives were always Uncle Bob, Aunt Helen. There was always a different phrase. And I would ask the listeners on what are the other examples where a 8th or 9th or 10th grade youngster sees an adult as a non-judgmental friend.
Now, your academic training and your career has been in what?
I am a geologist, research geologist, PhD, University of Illinois, a long, long time ago. And then had the enormous privilege of a 34-year career at the Illinois State Geological Survey, one of the scientific surveys allied with the University of Illinois. And today I serve on the governing board of that organization.
And what do your fellow geologists think of this activity of yours? Do they raise a skeptical eyebrow about a scientist off doing something like this?
Amusing comments when I would go, curious comments when I'd return, but also, my positive comments about the program. I have recruited so many counselors from Champaign-Urbana, and that's a joy. But yes, the comments on better you than me, taking youngsters to an island.
Now, sailing's fairly expensive, isn't it? I mean, boats cost, even a sunfish is not cheap these days, probably, and a trailer to pull it on, and access to a lake.
Cheaper than motorboats.
Okay.
Yes, it requires a boat, and a sailboat does require some maintenance. So a new sunfish is several thousand dollars, and a bigger sailboat can be enormous sums of money. But we don't consume gasoline. We use wind, and used boats can be found at modest prices. It's a hobby. It does require equipment. It requires a lake. It requires a trailer to move the boat, yes. But there's a magic. The magic is that on any day and any breeze, I can go anywhere on the lake. And to this day, sailing upwind is still magic.
And once you have that equipment, and it can be borrowed or shared, it is free. I mean, the wind costs nothing.
The wind is
nothing.
Free.
It's
yes.
there.
Yes.
Now, tell us about sailing upwind. The wind is coming, blowing from north to south, and you're on the south end of the lake. How could you possibly go north?
If I could modify that question just a bit, let's imagine we're in the middle of the lake, and the wind is blowing from north to south. It's easy to sail south. You just hang all the sailcloth on the boat. A potato chip can sail downwind, we call that, with the wind pushing from behind. It's downright dull. We generally teach the students not to do that for reasons I'll get to later. We can sail crosswise to the wind. It's called a reach. Put the sails halfway out, sail east or west, back and forth. And that's what you do on a lovely evening if you're having a cup of coffee on the boat and you're in conversation. You can sail upwind. The wind is from the north. I can get to the north end of the lake. Now, I can only sail at a 45-degree angle to the wind, so I must zigzag my way upwind, sail on one course at a 45-degree angle to the wind, turn the boat 90 degrees, called a tack, sail on the other course for a while, and through that zigzag pattern, I will get to the north end of the lake.
Now, for our non-sailing listeners, explain a little bit of the physics. How do you possibly go even at a 45-degree angle against the wind?
It is the same physics that keeps airplanes in the air, and it is the changing velocity of the wind over the curve in the sail. If the sail were not curved, this would not work. The back side of the sail, the curved side, where the wind is moving faster than it is on the front side, creates a slight vacuum. Most of the forces are pushing the boat to the side. Therefore, you have a keel and rudder and things to minimize the sideways motion. But a little of the force pulls you ahead. And it's the same magic that keeps a Boeing 747 in the air.
And has that understanding of that principle ever helped you as a research geologist solve personnel problems? Or
that may be a reach. I have dealt with a few personnel issues over the years. And,
I was thinking about that, not taking something head on, but
yes.
the oblique, the angle. Let's try to get around this obstacle.
Yes.
Let's turn this pressure that's working against us into our favor somehow. Can we use this energy?
And do it in many small steps. I suppose I could pick up another one. We don't need to go in the direction that the wind is pushing us. There's a little poem, and I may not remember it now. One ship drives east, the other west, on the self-same winds that blow. It is not the gales, but the set of our sails that determines the direction we go. I had to dredge that one up from pretty deep.
We're talking with Dr. David Gross, a research geologist, retired now, and who has for 24 years worked at a family camp up in Minnesota for the Unitarian Universalist as a volunteer, working with teenagers, teaching them how to sail and many other life lessons. If you'd like to join this conversation, perhaps share a camp experience from your past, do give us a call. This is a live program every Sunday evening from 5 to 6 here on WILL, a radio service of the College of Communication at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. To reach us anywhere that you can hear this program, including on the internet, you may use a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines you can reach. Punch in 333-9455. And if you're calling on a cell phone, just tell our good technical director, Brett Polson, when you call, and we'll move you to the head of the queue and get to your call quickly. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these programs. Next week, we'll be talking with two professors at the University of Illinois, Ty Newell and Mike McCauley, about the solar decathlon house that the University of Illinois is entering in a national competition in Washington, D.C., coming up in October. On August 26, our guest will be Rabbi David Teichtel, talking about the Jewish New Year. September 2nd, Professor Ed Colleger will be our guest. On September 9, Joel Schweitzer from the Hillel Foundation. Those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith. Hope you can tune in. Do write down our numbers and give us a call if you're interested in talking with us. Keeping the Faith is sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. I'm in my last year of being director at the Y. I've announced my retirement about a year from now. And one of the programs I'm still enjoying at the Y is Dump and Run. And starting tomorrow at 6 o'clock from 6 to 8, you may bring items that you'd like to donate to the Y's big recycling celebration out at the Stock Pavilion at the University of Illinois on Pennsylvania Avenue, just a couple blocks east of Memorial Stadium. From 6 to 8 on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from 9 in the morning till 8 at night, and then again on Friday from 9 in the morning till 8 at night, and next Saturday from 9 to 1, we'll be accepting things at the Stock Pavilion. We take all kinds of things, furniture, we take kitchen items, we take anything that students might find valuable, particularly who are coming from other countries to this university and setting up an apartment, living in a dorm, all kinds of things. And we sell them inexpensively, and if you donate things of value, you may take the value of those items off on your taxes as a charitable contribution. So we keep things out of the waste stream, and we give people bargains, and we help you clean out your garage and attic and closet. So we won't be accepting clothing at this time, although we will have clothing for sale that we've received earlier that we've had chance to sort. We don't want computer monitors, thank you. No artificial Christmas trees. We don't want sleeper sofas or too heavy. No appliances. But boy, do we take almost everything else. And the sale itself, if it's open to anyone, particularly international students and other students, but anybody in the community can take advantage of it. It'll start Thursday, August 23rd at 2 in the afternoon, from 2 to 9 on Thursday, the 23rd of August, Friday from 10 till 6, Saturday from 9 till 12. So do come to Dump and Run. It's a grand thing. If you've never seen the Stock Pavilion at the university filled with all kinds of things, it's quite an experience. We have a caller on line number one. Do you have a comment or question for our guest,
Hi.
David Gross?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you so much for having this guest on, and to the guest, thank you for coming. I've been real curious about the UUs. My in-laws are Quaker, and where they live down in New Orleans, they were quite elderly by the time they needed my care, but the meeting was too far for them to go, so they started attending UUs, and they took me with them one time, and I must admit, coming from a Catholic background, that was quite a shock.
What was the first thing you noticed?
Well, the folding chairs. There was no rituals that I could discern. And there wasn't exactly a preacher. We had a guest speaker. And at some part of the hour and a half, people would get up, and I guess probably in a Baptist church it would be called witnessing, but it was not emotional, and it was very thought-provoking. It was more of what I would call a philosophical or ethical dilemma, or posing a question to the congregation. And I kind of wondered where does the cohesiveness in the church of UUs come from?
Well, I'll let our guests respond, but let me say quickly that I've been in a number of Unitarian Universalist churches, and the folding chairs surprised me.
Oh.
That must have been a very informal and perhaps new congregation. The church in Champaign-Urbana, for example, has stained glass windows and pews, and it's quite lovely. So there's a great difference. But David, go ahead, please.
You offered so many comments that I could pick up on. Thank you. First, the philosophical, theological grounding, the Quakers and the Unitarians are somewhat close, so that's not a surprising association that you had that one. The folding chairs, churches vary. Ours, as Steve mentioned, in Urbana, is a very much traditional, beautiful, old Universalist church. Please come join us. We run two services beginning 2 weeks from now, 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We're in summer services. We run only one at 10 a.m. Today, you talk about tradition, our service was a hymn sing. We had a volunteer leading it, and it was people requesting favorite hymns, and it was a session on music.
And do you have a pipe organ?
We have a beautiful organ.
Yeah.
The question you ask at the end is powerfully important on, what are the common bounds? And for me, it's a community of seekers, a community seeking truth, a community working together on these issues. We do not have a creed. There is not a requirement to sign on a certain set of beliefs. There are a number of principles that are widely quoted. But for me, it's a process. There are traditions. Not as many as some denominations, maybe not as strong. We, in our church, light a flaming chalice to begin the service as a centering moment. We have hymns. We pass a collection plate. We do all of those things. Many Unitarian Universalist churches have professional clergy, extremely well-trained, dedicated people, and that is certainly the case in Champaign-Urbana. But some of the smaller ones, go by the word fellowship and run with lay-led individuals, and that's
more
a
like
choice.
More like a Quaker medium.
Yes.
Yes.
Listener, come sample us.
Caller, would you like to follow up with any of those?
Well, yes, thank you for the answer, because until this very moment, I assumed my one experience was typical, and now, which just goes to show how fallible we can be in our thinking, right? Thank you so much for coming, and I appreciate the information.
Well, I'll add two comments. When there's a visitor at our local church, I'm in conversation with them, I'll often suggest, come at least three times before you frame your opinion of us. And for this caller, I would recommend visit a total of three Unitarian churches, because you will find some range in style. Visit more than one.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. And as you say, even a Unitarian church, tell me if this is fair, likes variety from one service to the next. So one service, like you say today, was a hymn sing. The next one might be very philosophical. It might be a lecture on something.
That is absolutely correct. Some services will be based on the literature of theology. Others will be on current topics, issues of social importance. An example of the variety is provided by the magnificent rose window in the local Unitarian Church. It's a beautiful work of art, a very large window, the center of which changes week to week. We have about 40 different centers, and sometimes that artwork in the center will pick up on the theme of the sermon that week. As you drive by the church and it's illuminated from inside at night, look at the center of the window and it'll change week to week.
The caller asked about rituals and said the particular congregation she visited, there didn't seem to be any ritual. You mentioned one of lighting a candle. What other images are there in your congregation of Unitarian Universalists?
I'll use two examples of services that are common in churches and certainly traditional in ours in Champaign-Urbana. 2 weeks from today, in our traditional fall ingathering, as we sort of resume the new church year on the academic calendar, we have a water and stone ceremony. The members are invited to bring a small container of water from places they visited during the summer or stone that they picked up, and those are shared, poured together in a common bowl, the blending of the stories. And to that we add a sample of the water from the previous years, thus all the stories, the sense of gathering and blending. In the spring, toward the end of the academic year, we'll have a flower communion Sunday where the members are invited to bring flowers. The basket is passed. You take a flower out different from the one you brought. Again, a blending of the community. So activities to emphasize the community.
I remember from times when I've been in the Unitarian Universalist Church on Green Street in Urbana that there are some lovely... I can't remember now if they're paintings, but on the walls representing a whole number of different religious traditions.
Thank you for that reminder. They are banners. They are beautiful
banners.
Works of art.
Okay.
There are six of them representing the great religions of the world and emphasizing that we can find truth and value in many, many traditions. And those banners will sometimes move around depending on the subject of a sermon, maybe a different one up front. So we are reminded that there is value in many, many traditions.
Now, part of the Unitarian tradition is Christian, explicitly. How do Unitarians deal with issues where one Unitarian is more committed to the Christian understanding of Unitarian Universalism and one is not? What do you do about parts of the Bible that say things like, and Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, as if that's the only way?
You'll hear a wide range of interpretations and a wide range of opinions. The simple and somewhat humorous answer to your question is discussion, and a lot of it, sometimes lively. Personally, I listen to all of the traditions, think about it. I'm always searching. There are Unitarian Universalists who are very much humanists, who look for the humanist traditions. There are others who are very much on the Christian side of the denomination. There's a wide range. And the churches vary somewhat, but keeping the tent wide enough to serve a wide variety of people is a challenge for a Unitarian Universalist minister.
Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who might like to make a comment or a question. 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, where that's a local call for you, 333-WILL. Elsewhere, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. We welcome your calls and are eager to have others join in the conversation. We're talking with Dr. David Gross, a research geologist, retired from the Geological Survey, and he's been a volunteer for 24 years on an island teaching sailing to teenagers every summer for a week. Now, you mentioned your family went with you for many years. Tell us about the effect of this kind of a church camp experience on your kids. You mentioned it a little bit. Are they still involved?
I feel so very, very privileged that my sons, who are grown and married and healthy and moving on in their lives, are also active in Unitarian churches. I don't claim that this is typical, but it has been my enormous privilege. My older son and daughter-in-law are in the Chicago area, and they're active in Unity Temple, UU, a Unitarian church in Oak Park, which is a Frank Lloyd Wright museum building. My younger son and daughter-in-law are active in First Unitarian of Alton, Illinois, where that daughter-in-law is the director of religious education. And my grandchildren are always proud to show me their church when I visit, and I am thrilled to be taken through their church.
A story that's not heard much these days. Thank you for sharing. We have a caller waiting on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello. I have a question, please.
Sure.
What six religions do the banners represent?
Well, let's see. I remember Islam, Hinduism,
Buddhism.
Judaism, Christianity.
I got that far, and I couldn't remember the last one.
Well, it could be Taoism. It could be Baha'i. I don't remember. Maybe someone else from the local congregation will call and tell us.
I was just curious.
Well, thank you, Steve, for bailing me out on that one. And
thank
I'm
you.
Hoping the Reverend Axel Gehrman will call in the next few minutes.
Or someone else. Thanks for the question. And of course, the best answer would be, well, we'll come next Sunday and see. Yes, that's right.
Yes. At 10 a.m. next Sunday, we'll be in the last in the services in our fellowship hall, which is air-conditioned, before we move back to the main sanctuary, which is not air-conditioned.
Okay, and then?
And you would see the banners if you came 2 weeks from today.
Uh-huh. Let's talk a little bit while we're waiting for an answer to that final question from a listener. Tell us a little bit about the seasons. You mentioned following sort of the school year, an in-gathering in the fall, a celebration in the spring. What else do you celebrate? Do you celebrate Christmas? Do you celebrate Easter?
Absolutely. Yes, we celebrate the traditional Christian holidays. I think the Easter celebration is a complex one and one that is maybe not easy for all members of the Unitarian Universalist denomination. But the flavor of the year is very much the Christian calendar, and certainly my family celebrates Christmas in the extreme. I love the season.
So in the church, would there be symbols? Would there be a Christmas tree, for example?
Yes, the front of our church will have a Christmas tree, also a mitten tree where people donate clothing and to be given to the needy. Very much. The flowers will be there at Easter. The seasons are celebrated, of course.
Tell us about I guess it's a question of diversity. In the summer camp, when the families mm-hmm. gather, how much diversity is there? Age, race, things like that?
The age diversity is substantial, the full range. We were there with three generations. The racial diversity, less so. Unfortunately, the Unitarian Universalist churches have modest numbers of people of color, something we talk a lot about, work on it, but I don't know that we do it any better than any of the other denominations these days.
What about social concerns and social action? The Unitarians are known for their compassion and for being involved in social justice issues. Does this show up at camp at all? Is this something that's taught to young people? Or
we'll talk about it informally a lot. It is very much on the minds of young people. Living a just life, treating their friends fairly, is a common late-night conversation in the cabins and is one of the fascinations for me, and I come away encouraged by our young people. The young people who choose to be active in a high school church group, who choose to go to camp, are young people who are thinking and who are asking questions and give me considerable hope. I can't claim it's all young people in this country.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the difficulties. You've talked about the joys, the pleasures, why you'd continue to go back, but surely there's conflict, and perhaps among counselors, perhaps among campers. How do you deal with those? Here it is, a church camp. People are supposed to be thinking the best thoughts, but there are often difficulties. And
there are difficulties. And when we encounter them, we'll sometimes then in the off-season between these lean back and try to think it through. It was very early in my 24 years that we had some difficulties within the counselors. And the issue was, because we're on an island, you can control just about anything. The question becomes, what do we control and what do we not control?
Sure.
And we were struggling with that. That resulted in the first edition of a training manual that we now have for this program. Then many years later, we had one instance of a young person bringing illicit drugs to camp, and we struggled with that. And that was the only case in all my years that we took a youngster home, removed him from the island.
Uh-huh.
Of course, that was the week we could not find the parents, so we had to take that youngster home to the spouse of one of our counselors. So you struggle with that. Our principles in this are to deal on the island with things that are legal, and if there's violation of law, such as drugs, then we remove the youngster from the community. But we talk a lot about what do we try to work with. Maybe I'll turn a little bit to the humorous side, a couple examples. My co-leader is an MD psychiatrist from Madison, Wisconsin. A 24/7 consulting psychiatrist is very helpful when you have 60 kids. I joked last year that there were three measures of success of the program. One was we got the kids all home again. Number two was we had only one broken arm. And number three was, to the best of my knowledge, there were no pregnancies. At least no parent called me. Yes, these are youngsters, and we're giving them an environment to explore. But young people who are 13, 14, 15 years old have a lot of enthusiasm for exploration, but haven't yet built all of the judgment to use that well, and we're there to help them with that.
You talked about the advantage of being at a place where there are no cars on the road, and the young people signed this pledge not to use alcohol or drugs while they're there. But you have these boats, and alcohol in boats is a dangerous mix, too.
Absolutely. Hopefully we don't have that mix in the week we're there. We've had issues with alcohol, and you struggle with that, but you know those issues are present in Champaign-Urbana, everywhere.
Sure.
I think we probably have fewer of them there, and we emphasize community more. We talk about boating safety. My sense is that a 15-year-old on a small sailboat in the lake is probably far safer than is the 16-year-old with a new driver's license in Champaign-Urbana.
Uh-huh.
And I'm there in another boat, and I'm watching. I should talk a bit, if I could, about
sure.
the program we
of course.
Run. We do three elements in the day. We spend the mornings in construction work projects for the camp. It looks like a Habitat for Humanity site in the mornings. Teaching skills, using tools, teaching ownership of the camp. I built that pride. We spend the afternoons, the subjects we've been talking about, sailing, teaching outdoor skills, canoeing, hiking. The evenings, the youngsters program, volleyball tournaments, so forth, with a dance Thursday night, a talent show Friday night. And they have a sense, a very real, honest sense of controlling those times and those hours, and that's incredibly important to them.
When you were talking earlier about building trust and how the counselors often Students have said, you are the first adult outside my family that I felt trusted me. How do you build trust?
You're with them. I try to not be judgmental. Not sure that I'm always successful. I try to be their friend. We're living with them for the week. We're laughing with them for the week. We're enjoying them. We're demonstrating that adults can have fun also. And I have the support of wonderful other counselors. And then I probably don't have a simple answer. Maybe it's an attitude more than anything. Start with a level of trust, and more often than not, you receive it.
You mentioned earlier that the Universalist side of the Unitarian Universalist is a very hopeful, sort of a positive thinking group, tradition. How does that play out at this camp? I mean, do you assume that the kids are going to be good, and they're going to behave, and they're going to care about each other, and they're going to follow rules, or do you assume that they're basically nasty little kids at heart, and that's going to come through?
If you assume the best, you will most commonly receive it. So, yes, we assume trust. We state trust. If you make that positive assumption and you live it in your own style and your own actions, 98% of the time it's responded. Now, there are issues, and I haven't talked about the negative. There are hard spots.
Sure.
There are hard spots, with hard spots in any of our lives, and youngsters do make errors. There was one at camp this year that I've heard subsequently it's had some pretty serious encounters with the law, wasn't Champaign-Urbana youngsters. But there are, of course. And we're not in nirvana there.
Sure.
But I think if you assume trust and you assume friendship, you'll be right in almost every case.
Tell us about some of the other things that happen at these camps that are so popular with UUs around the country besides sailing.
Conversation amongst youngsters, friendships, dance, activities, the sense of being in a community, the very real values of being accepted by colleagues. In terms of physical activities, a lot of outdoor activities. The youngsters grumble a bit about the work projects, but when we have an evaluation forum at the end of the week and we ask them what they learned, they talk about, I learned to paint a cabin, I learned to build a wall, I learned to use an electric power tool. It comes through, even though they grumble a bit about that couple hours in the morning. We do everything we can to give them choices. Each of the counselors will lead a work project, typically designed to attract five young people. I'm often the one mixing and pouring concrete. Somehow they associate that with a geologist. And yeah, I'll have to admit, it's a bit of a challenge to stand in front of 60 young people and say, who thinks it would be fun to mix concrete?
Sure.
That takes a bit of selling. But it's fun. Being with them, choosing to, going into the room with a belief that I will like these young people is key.
Tell us about some of the personalities, not with last names, of course, but we're down to our last couple minutes. Who are some of the ones who just stick out?
There are so many. Let me talk a bit about the counselors, the people who choose to volunteer a
sure.
week. Most of them, there are exceptions, are people who are not working with young people professionally in the rest of their lives. We've had
right.
some teachers and counselors, but we have a number of people from science and engineering. We have a number of software people, people who do other things and come and enjoy this week as something different in their lives. They care about being parents and they care about being grandparents. The youngsters, there are so many personalities and so many happy times. I'm trying to avoid telling any negative stories because I just don't want to publicize those. I'm impressed with how incredibly bright and capable young people are. I'm impressed and sometimes concerned with how fast they grow up, that these young people at ages 13 and 14 and 15 are dealing with issues that I hadn't heard of or hadn't thought about when I was that age. I think our society prompts young people to grow up much, much too quickly. And maybe having fun on an island is a little bit of a refuge from that.
We've been talking with Dr. David Gross, a research geologist with the State Geological Survey for many years here in Champaign-Urbana. He He's a lay member of the Unitarian Universalist Church on Green Street in Champaign-Urbana, and for 24 years has volunteered at a summer camp up in northern Minnesota, teaching teenagers to sail and other life lessons. We've enjoyed talking with David about these and want to thank our callers for their questions and comments. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'm director of the University YMCA. The Y is the oldest charity in the county and has been on this campus for 134 years, working with university students and others on campus, faculty and staff and people in the community, with several different programs. We have a Friday Forum series that starts every fall, and coming up with Friday Forum for this coming fall, our series is on citizenship without borders, and we have a series of 9 speakers, about half from this campus and community and about half from elsewhere, and they'll be starting up on September 14, so watch for announcements about Friday Forum. Another of our programs is called Communiversity. Communiversity is a non-graded, non-credit series of courses on all kinds of interesting things. You might want to learn to tango or dance. You might want to learn one of the martial arts. You might want to study theological themes in movies. Those are some of the opportunities that will be coming up with Communiversity that starts this fall from the University YMCA. So do watch for the Communiversity catalog that will be coming out soon. And we have a variety of courses that are very inexpensive and taught by people who have something to share. If you have questions about any of the Y programs, do give me a call, 337-1500 during the week. That's area code 217. We have a vehicle donation program, and we sold our last car that we had received earlier this summer, just last week, to an international student from Africa. And so we have room on our very small parking lot for another car, too. If anybody would like to donate a car to a local charity, also call me, Steve Shoemaker, and you can take the value of that car as we sell it off on your taxes, a charitable contribution, and know you're making a contribution to the Y, and also, as we sell it, very inexpensively, giving somebody a good bargain. So if you have a car that's in decent shape, you'd like to not have to sell yourself, do give me a call. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, our guests will be Ty Newell and Mike McCauley talking about the solar decathlon house. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Lawrence Stern's 18th century novel Tristram Shandy is a staple of college English literature courses. For many, it's unreadable. For sure, it's unfilmable. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Tristram Shandy, the film. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7, here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 60s and northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 90 degrees and east winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 60s and southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The 2007-2008 season brochure and KrannertCenter.com announcements of the 2007-2008 season of guest artists are now available.
You're listening to WILL Urbana, made possible by the support of our listeners, the friends of WILL. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.